Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're recording late talking about Fantastic Four and Happy Gilmore too, but you know, our opinions matter, so you get it last.
Well, they've everybody has had a chance to kind of stew on these two properties, and we're gonna including us and kind of give us a little bit more of a chance to be a little bit more considerate to. I like reapproaching things after a little bit, just because it always adds a little bit more context. Like, you know, you're not so reactionary. And I know it's only been a few days, but you know, we both have had some time to sit with Fantastic Four and Happy Gilmore too, and I feel like I think a little bit of time is not a bad thing. So, like, I hate instant reactions because it never feels like they're either I hate the movie or I love the movie. There's not consideration to it.
There's definitely, I tend to fall on the recency bias thing for things I'm kind of predisposed to like. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then it's one of those, it's funny, I was having a conversation with Tim this weekend. I got to catch up with him. He actually scored a Jaws popcorn bucket for me because I could not find them anywhere. I don't know why they were out so early when the re-release isn't till late August. But whatever, all the AMCs were selling out of them. Every time I've got a line on this AMC had several, I would get there the next day and be like, we sold out. And I'm like, I'm just not meant to have one of these buckets for a reasonable price. And Tim happened to call me and be like, I'm walking into an AMC right now and I can see that they have them. And I was like, I will send you the money now. My girlfriend, Stephanie, her favorite movie is Jaws. It was her birthday. I did a whole Jaws themed birthday. So, anyway, I got to see him this past weekend, and he was kind of giving me shit about my opinion on Captain America Brave New World, and how I said I thought it was great. And look, man, you texted me right after I saw the movie. I did think it was fun.
And
in hindsight, we just got back-to-back weeks of Superman and Fantastic Four. Do I think, compared to those movies, that Captain America Brave New World is a great movie? Not really. No. But, so, yeah, I definitely have a recency bias thing with a lot of stuff like this. So I also have the thing where I get super, super hyped, famously amongst our friend group, for a movie like Guardians of the Galaxy, and then I walk into it and be like, guys, I didn't like that.
Yeah. I mean, it took you three movies to start to actually turn around on the Guardians because of that. I still remember, that is one of the biggest things that I remember from our time at Film Dispenser.
Yeah, I was just like, this is going to be so great. It's going to be incredible. And everybody walked out of the movie going like, that was amazing. And I walked out of that movie going like, that was disappointing. it was nice to have a couple of days to sit on these things, before we sat down to talk about it. You did tell me before we started recording that you watched Sirens though. It's Netflix, right? Am I right?
Yes, you are. So, I have been for some context, because I probably would not have really chosen to watch this. This was a wife choice because I've been so, like Logan knows, I've been super busy with work, working weekends, and some overtime. This is the time of year that it gets super busy for me. It's not very fun, but she decided that she wanted to watch the Sirens, and I was all for it because Millie Alcock is in it.
Alcock, yeah.
And like, she's only in two episodes of the Game of Thrones dragon thing, which, you know, and one of them is just so weirdly just like, I won't get into it, but it's just, it's not a good look for her. Like, you didn't really get an understanding of the kind of prowess she is as an actress. So I wanted to actually check her out. And I mean, she deserved the Emmy nomination. Like, everybody, like, this hype for this show is a little too much. Like, because I've been hearing, like, wild things. Like, oh, like, it's one of the best things of 2025. No, it's not really. It's a soap. It's an elevated soapy soap show that's really funny. Like, it has people that you're going to love. Like, you know, Glenn Howerton is in it, playing exactly who you expect him to be. A piece of shit, dumb, idiot, billionaire. Bill Camp is in it. Kevin Bacon, of course, the GOAT, Julianne Moore, doing this whole, like, she's like the Susan Lucci, if you know who that is, of these kinds of what they consider elevated television right now, which is like, you look back on it and it's just a soap. But the best thing about this show is it has Felix Solis in it. And we all know Felix Solis from one of our favorite shows. Not Felix Solis. Oh, God, what is his name? That's the other guy. But Josh Segura, who is actually in Abbott Elementary. He plays one of the admins from the district.
I love that guy. He's been in so much stuff. He does not get, like, good, he doesn't get enough credit for being such a good character actor. He can do, like, he really can do anything. Like, he plays, like, the really stupid dude so well. But, like, he can also, like, he was in Scream, which Scream was he in? Six?
Six, yeah. He was in the New York one.
Yeah, and he's, like, the hot next door neighbor guy, you know? He was in Arrow for a while. He was one of the villains on that show.
Yes, he was. That's right.
And he's been in Animal Control. I don't know if you watch Animal Control.
No, I have not yet. But he's also in, he was also in She-Hulk.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yep.
I forgot. The dude shows up in everything, and he's always great, man.
Yes, like, he is.
He does not get enough credit. So,
and he plays this guy who's affectionately, like, his name is Raymond, but they affectionately call him Fuckboy in the show.
Nice.
It's five episodes. It gets super dark at the end, but for the most part, it's a pretty light on its feet, really funny kind of show. I enjoyed it. It's about trashy people doing trash ass things. It makes no surprise to me that this was produced by Margaret Robey because of the kind of I don't know how to describe it, but it's got this very kind of like when you watch it, you go, oh yeah, it's over a weekend. It's over like Labor Day weekend. And there's a big like to do at the end. And there's a lot of rich people and they're dressed in boat attire, but it's actually really funny because the main character is trying to ingratiate herself into this world so she can extract her sister, who's played by Millie Alcock, out of this situation, which she totally wants to be in. And it talks about trauma and just different kinds of things. It's a good show. I don't know if it's worth the praise that it's getting.
So two funny things. Speaking of the guy we were talking about, The first thing I ever saw that guy in was actually a show called Sirens. Huh. It was like a USA half comedy about ambulance drivers, like EMT workers.
Okay.
If you can find it, it's really, really funny. It's got Michael Mosley in it.
Oh, okay.
And like Bill Nunn, like Kevin Daniels. It was a very just cute comedy. It's funny that he's in this show as well called Sirens.
That's funny. Like it looks like it was produced by Dennis Leary. So it's almost like it almost feels like it's an offshoot of
It felt a lot like The Job.
Oh, okay.
Ever watched his.
Yes.
So it's not as dramatic as the firefighter.
Oh, yeah. Rescue Me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot more like his old half hour show, The Job.
Okay. I really did love The Job. Like, that was one of those things that just didn't get its due. Like, it would only had like, what, two seasons, and they were like both 10 apiece. And I do remember him. I mean, that show had like again, that one also had Bill Nunn. It had Lenny Clark. Like, it had John Ortiz. I mean, who doesn't? And then of course it has Keith David. Not David Keith.
Yeah.
Our version of Dick Sargent and Sergeant York.
But the big question is, like, because you dropped out of House of the Dragon.
Yes.
I think she was in more than two. I think she was in, like, most of that first season. Seven episodes, I think.
Yeah, seven of the, like, it goes until, what's his name, beats the shit out of, like does the, like, whole beat the night does the beat down of the dude.
Yeah.
And then they do the age jump, and then the next five are like, or four are like, or maybe it's like three are the aged up girl, which at that point I kind of just dropped out of. But anyways, you were gonna say.
Well, I didn't know how far into it you got. I loved her in that show. She got a lot of, you know, people talking.
Yeah.
And now after seeing this, which I haven't seen, but does it hype you up for Supergirl? Or
yes,
are you just like, because like we didn't get much of her in Superman. One little like, you know, hungover stumbling scene. And it's funny. It's cute. But it's not really showing what she might be able to do. In that role. And she just hasn't had a ton of high profile things. I mean, this, you know, Netflix had pushed it pretty well. Mm-hmm. And she's in it with a lot of great people. And then House of the Dragon. But, you know, once you get past a certain point, it's kind of easy to forget that, like, a lot of people in that show. Like, it's easy to just be like, oh yeah, I forgot that Patty Considine's in that show. Yeah, like, and you know, they're substantial, but it's just easy. Game of Thrones was that way too. It's like, oh yeah, that's right, he was in Game of Thrones for, you know, eight episodes. God, like, you know, oh yeah, Pedro Pascal was in Game of Thrones. Like, you just fucking forget. So it doesn't help that there's a giant wait between every season. That's basically, you answered the question. Yeah, it does get you a little more hyped for not that we weren't hyped for it, but you know, she's not a proven box office draw.
No.
Yeah. You know.
No, but I like to speak a little bit more to it, and then we can kind of move on from it. It doesn't give you an indication of like the role, but the power in which, I mean, she plays scenes with everybody in that show, and like, you know, her work with, like, you know, it would be like, so like her work with Julianne Moore and Kevin Bacon is such that.
Oh, Kevin Bacon's in it?
Oh yeah, he plays.
Did I tell you I'm going to see him?
No, you're going to see the Bacon Brothers?
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome. I love the Bacon Brothers. I just love him. But yeah, oh, that's great, dude. But the way that she is able to play off of both of them, like, it gives you the understanding that she's not, like, it's not like they're acting circles around her. And especially her work with Julianne Moore, like, you can see that she's, that she gets their respect, and it's like a sparring partner, not somebody, not a punching bag, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it really definitely does give me hope. Like, and it makes me really excited for whatever we're getting from Superman or Supergirl next year. I'm really interested in seeing a trailer for this to see what the tone is. The tone is, because this is the first thing in, like, it sounds weird, but, like, you know, just to kind of talk about it, I realize this is the first thing outside of James Gunn that's a part of the DC universe that's not so involved with James Gunn, because, like, all four things that we've gotten, the Suicide Squad, Peacemaker, Creature Commandos, and Superman, were all written and directed by, or co-directed by James Gunn. So he had a huge hand. This is the first one where he's just producing. Like, he doesn't have a he oversaw it, but not written by him and not directed.
This is his first, like, playing Kevin Feige. Not playing Kevin Feige is.
Yeah.
Sounds, you know, like I'm dissing him. But, his shaping of the world from, like, not being, like you said, not having complete hands on. You know, he's not sitting in the chair. He's not calling all the shots, you know. But he did recently speak about Momoa as Lobo and was, like, just so effusive with his praise about how he cannot wait for everybody to see, like, what Momoa does in this role. So,
yeah. That gets me excited for this role, because it's kind of the role that he wanted, but they kind of gave him, like, it feels like, so, like, I'm going to throw something out there that I feel like if they give Henry Cavill something, because it's been talked about that, like, Gunn has been, like, very kind of, like, he feels bad that he, that Cavill, like, re-upped and got fucking basically shoved down because of his Superman, right? If Cavill gets a role, I feel like it's going to be a more perfect fit than Superman was for him. Because when you have, because it's like the analogy of, he was a good Aquaman, but when I think of Jason Momoa, I think of somebody like Lobo. Like, he's the perfect Lobo. So I just feel like, it's not to talk shit about the Snyderverse, but the Snyderverse seemed to be all about what was cool and not what was perfect for the person. And I don't know, like, I feel like if Henry Cavill does get a role and, like, whatever he's cast in, I'm kind of in the bag for whatever James Gunn is doing now, because it's so, and we're kind of going to talk about stuff with Superman, with Fantastic Four, because, like, we'll get to it and you'll understand why. But it's like James Gunn has got this confidence and an understanding of, like, what people can do and what people can't do. And I feel like that's something that's, like in the next 5 years is going to be really great to watch as we see this universe that he's creating expand. And that's all.
Yeah. It would kind of be funny to just be like, oh, hey guys, Henry Cavill's Batman now.
Yeah, I didn't want to fucking say it, but, like, when you watch Henry Cavill in Mission Impossible Fallout, I think it is. Yeah, it's Fallout. He's literally fucking playing Batman.
Yeah.
He's literally playing Bruce Wayne with a mustache, and it would be great if it was the mustache.
Could you everybody imagine? Talks about, oh God. Everybody talked about, oh, well, we want Alan Richardson in the part, but, you know, I mean, maybe, but he's such a tank of a dude that, like, I don't know. Alan Richardson feels more like Wolverine, like,
to be honest,
less, like, you know, the Cavalrine thing in Deadpool Wolverine was funny, but you know, that's not gonna happen. So bringing him back as Batman would be fucking hysterical. And James Gunn is just like twisted enough to do something like that. So, all right. So, let's talk about Happy Gilmore 2.
Yeah.
which is also on Netflix. First let me say, when's the last time you watched, or let me ask, when's the last time you watched Happy Gilmore, the first one?
Okay. So oddly enough, I have so Kino Lorber just brought out Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore on 4K. But the Happy Gilmore isn't coming out until late August, but I have the disc. So there's going to be a review forthcoming. So I just recently rewatched both of them. So like literally last week before Happy Gilmore came out, Happy Gilmore 2, I should say.
Nice.
So what about you? When was the last time you saw Happy Gilmore?
About 6 hours before I watched Happy Gilmore 2. I hadn't seen it in, over 10 years, probably 15 years. It's been a very long time since I watched Happy Gilmore. But it was one of those movies that in my, 20s, we watched,
constantly.
It was always on somewhere, like Tommy Boy, you know, like late teens, yep, early 20s. Tommy Boy, Happy Gilmore, they were always on. And so, we were always watching it, you know. It was always on, TBS or something. So, I didn't think I needed to rewatch it, but it was on Netflix. I was like, well, let's rewatch the first one. So, me and Steph sat down and rewatched the first one. I'm really, really glad I did.
Yes.
It's a stupid movie. Yeah. I mean, I could be talking about either one of them, but the first one is a really stupid movie. And I just the part of me that wants to be, you know, a movie critic is just like, this is so dumb, but it's just so much fun that I don't know if you sit down and to watch a movie like this, expecting any kind of, pathos or, you know, even any real plot besides nonsensical shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's a Adam Sandler movie. So it did really help with, then a few hours later, sitting down that night and watching the second one, because it kind of it's like an appetizer, you know, I know what the meal is going to be. So I'm not sitting down misremembering the first movie as this great piece of cinema when it's just a big, dumb, goofy comedy, you know?
No, absolutely.
So what did you think about the second one?
I'm there with you. I really enjoyed it. I think that what people forget, and I think that Sandler and his writing partner, Tim Hitherly, who actually wrote the first first six, up until I think it was Big Daddy, wrote the first six together of Sandler movies. And I think that what people forget is that the Sandler movies are just stupid. They're just dumb. They're like Tommy Boy. They're like Black Sheep. I prefer Black Sheep over Tommy Boy. I know that sounds weird, but I don't know why. I think that Tommy Boy's a little bit meaner than Black Sheep. And I RIP, RIP, Chris Farley, but they're just dumb. They had the barest of plots, but they were dumb and they were just stupid. This is a movie that in Happy Gilmore, the original, that's a movie that actually has him fighting Bob fucking Barker. Come on. This is not high art, and it's not supposed to be. And you are right. I'm really glad that I got to watch Happy Gilmore again, because it really did prepare me for the stupidity and the bliss of the stupidity that is Happy Gilmore 2. Like, I think I texted you, it's my favorite of the Netflix Adam Sandler movies that are comedies. Because it feels like, in a way, he kind of got it all together with this one. Like it meshed together in a way that kind of felt like, oh, this is like the Happy Madison comedies. This is not like something got lost for me with Grown Ups. Like it just didn't work anymore.
I don't know if they directly talked about this, but though the Netflix deal basically became, and even before that, those movies, the studios are throwing money at this man because
yep.
his comedies would make money. And so he just uses that money to take his family and his friends on vacation, film a movie there, and then dump it. Like it was minimal effort on really anybody, on everybody's part. Like those movies have a lot of great comedians in it, and it's like they're reading a teleprompter. It's so flat and just so predictable, you know. And that's the thing about the old Adam Sandler movies. Like rewatching the first Happy Gilmore and watching this one, like 5 minutes into this movie, something completely unpredictable happens.
Holy shit.
Did like, not see it coming.
No.
Like, I forgot Chubbs died so fucking soon in the first movie. I was like, oh yeah, so he's like in this movie for 10 minutes.
Yep.
And then it's just all happy. A ghost. And it's crazy. And then they just repeat the formula for the second. I love how they're like, well, we didn't want to just remake the first movie, but you kind of did. You upped the ante and just did a lot of the same things just in different circumstances, you know?
Absolutely.
Instead of killing his mentor, he kills his wife.
Yeah. Which, like, you know, and then has her come back as a ghost, just like in the original, like, which is just wild. But also, like the weird, like, okay, so the plot that I really liked, which was so odd to me because I was like, oh man, this is gonna be so stupid, was the alcohol problem. Like, yeah. I actually genuinely, like, and then him having to go into AA, and then who's in AA? Like, I'm not gonna, yep. Like, it's one of those things that I was so not expecting, but it wasn't, like, preachy. It was literally just a thing that Sandler would do, right? Well, and so honestly, like, it's like one of those movies that, you're right, it kind of follows the storyline. It adds something new to it. It twists it a little bit, but it keeps the tone and the whole thing of what made Happy Gilmore a classic for our generation. It yeah. felt like it was the same thing here. Like, it was like the understanding of the sport. Like, you and I are sports guys, right? And I don't follow golf, but I still follow golf enough to fucking laugh my ass off. Hey, Uncle John Daly, and know what that shit is. That shit
was so funny. Like, just like the fact that he got as many golfers as he did to cameo.
Yes.
But just the John Daly of it all was, oh my God, man. Every time they cut to him and Steve Buscemi, it had me cracking up.
No, it really did. But it works. Like, it works. Like, Scottie Scheffler is in it, and they make jokes about Scottie Scheffler that, like, as sports guys, we know what that is. The same with the hockey. Like, his son's being named Gordy, Wayne, like, all of these hockey guys, because he's still hockey. Like, when Shooter makes the joke about fucking, and we'll get to Shooter in a second, which is, like, probably one of my favorite parts. Like, when Shooter says, fuck the Boston Bruins, and they fucking lose their shit.
Yeah.
Like, I like, we know what that means. And it's like, there's that knowingness that's in Happy Gilmore, the original, the sports shit is still like present here. Right. And so like the tone of it all, I feel like he really got, like, they really got right and they really cared. Like, I watched his stand-up and there was something going on in his stand-up where I was like, oh, fuck, he's funny again. Like, he's really funny. Like I don't know if you've seen the stand-up.
I haven't seen the new one.
Watch it. It was directed by Benny Safdie. It's shot in, like, 16 millimeter. It's kind of grainy, but it's kind of like this weird kind of loosey-goosey. He's playing the guitar. He plays music. He does some stand-up. It's very much like his old record. You remember like his first record?
Yeah.
Where he did skits, but he also did music. It was like our thing. I mean, I don't know about you, but it was, for me, it was a thing, right? And it was funny. Like, it was actually funny. And I looked at my wife at one point, like, it was like, I think it came out last year or the year before. I was like, is fucking Sandler funny again? And she looked at me and then she was about to, I think she was about to say no, but then Sandler said something and he did something in that stupid voice of his. And she started laughing. She goes, yeah, I guess so. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. He has to make a funny movie. One thing, stand up. Another thing, movie. And now we cut to like a couple of years later. He does Happy Gilmore 2. And I'm laughing. Like, I'm actually genuinely laughing at some of these moments. Yeah. Like, it's not, it. Like, the biggest crime about this movie is that it didn't fucking come out in the theaters. Like, could you imagine if this came out? Like,
I understand you want people to come to Netflix. And by all accounts, it is the most watched thing in the first weekend that they've ever released.
Yep.
Like, ever released. So I get it. It's driving people to your site. But, I mean, I'm kind of glad it didn't, because it definitely would have cut into Superman and Fantastic Four business if it had come out this weekend. But what a primer it would have been for Naked Gun, you know?
Oh, God, yeah. Like, if you did it the week after Naked Gun, because, I mean, like, I think that we both agree we're going to go see Naked Gun. It looks like... Like my favorite indication that Naked Gun is actually going to be a good movie, like it's going to be a funny movie, is that all the critics are shitting on it. Like, that's my indication. Oh, this is going to be fucking stupid and fun and what I want, because they're like, you know, like whatever they're saying. But yeah, like it literally opened to like, I think it was like 50 million people had watched it. Like, and it overthrew the biggest thing that they have right now, which is K-pop Demon Hunters, which is still doing great business or still doing great numbers. But man, like, it's, I don't know, like at the end of the day, it's like, it's a crowd pleaser and it should actually be seen in a crowd. And that's the shame, is that like, I'm sitting there and we're me and my wife are laughing.
A theater full of people, like, it really, you know, I watched it like you. I watched it with my significant other, and we're both laughing. But I can't imagine the feeling of, you know, 75, 80, 100 people in a theater when John Daly shows up. Or,
oh, God. When Travis Kelce tackles fucking Scottie Scheffler? Like, when he makes the joke? Oh, my God. Like, I was not expecting, like, Travis Kelce is funny, but The Find is Bad Bunny as his caddy. Like, Bad Bunny is his caddy along with fucking, what's his name, who shows up? Who's the other guy that his cousin?
His cousin? Yeah. They're like, you're sure he's okay with us hitting golf balls at him?
Oh my God. Like those two, Marcello Hernandez, that's who it is. Because he's in Saturday Night Live. We watch Saturday Night Live. So we love him, but those two together,
Gottfieri showing
holy
up.
Holy shit. Like, holy shit. Just, yes.
Like, what the hell, man?
But also makes complete sense with XL or whatever the fucking bot, the golf league is.
Kid Cudi for like,
oh my God,
5 minutes. Like, what the hell, man?
As an FBI agent.
It is a damn shame the Eminem thing got spoiled, because that was such a funny reveal. I thought for sure that Eminem was going to be I knew he was in it, but I thought he was going to be the kid, the caddy, all grown up. I was like, because that caddy looked like, if you go back and watch the first one, it's like, holy shit, that's Eminem.
But also, exactly, but also getting the original guy who played the fucking caddy.
Yeah.
That's fucking, like, I had to slow clap for fucking Sandler the entire time, because every single
time. Anybody he could bring back, he brought back. Like, yeah. It is insane. I would love to know what Carl Weathers was going to do. If it was going to be like, he was going to play like Chubbs's dad or something. You know, they're going to like age him up a lot, you know, like give him some gray or whatever, and, you know, have him just play, or even try to age him down and play like Chubbs's son, which they did do Chubbs's son in this. And that was like the ridiculous length of his arm.
Oh my God.
Just insane, man.
Played by Lavelle Crawford, who's in one of our favorite shows, Better Call Saul. Like, he instantly put a smile on my face that he was playing Chubbs' son. Like it was kind of like, I mean, Kevin Nealon showing up, Dennis Dugan, like, all of these guys, like he actually had them show up.
He even manages, like, even though they've kind of, like, lost a lot of favor, he does get John Lovitz and Rob Schneider in there.
Yeah.
For very brief cameos. You know, say what you want about both those guys. I don't think they're good people, no. But you know, they are friends with him, and you know, Sandler is pretty loyal to his friends. So like dropping Lovitz in there for, you know, that little cameo. Schneider doesn't get much. I think he just rolls on screen for 2 seconds, you know?
Yeah.
But hey, it probably got him a little paycheck, and you know, it's whatever. But the cameos are all freaking wonderful. The way they get, because I forgot about how much Subway is in the first movie, much of like that budget relied on like promotion from Subway, and you know, of course Subway's, you know, gotten taken a little bit of a downturn since their big promoter in the early 2000s turned out to be a pedophile.
Yeah.
Just coming back and doing it like that, I don't know. It's funny and it works, but it's also this like breaking the fourth wall thing, like him having 4 sons.
Yes.
When in real life
he has daughters.
Four
daughters.
Who all show up in this movie.
And yes.
Are all great. His wife is in it for 5 minutes, and she's really, really, she's fun for she plays the dance instructor. And, you know, she's fun for the 5 minutes she's in it. I don't know. It's just, it's kind of sweet on top of being funny. The one thing, even though it shocked the hell out of me, the one thing was like not having Julie Bowen more in the movie, killing her off in the first 10 minutes of the movie. And I get why you do it, because you need that you need the stakes, you need something for him. You know, you got to knock the hero down and let him pick himself back up. But I was just like, I can't believe they brought her back to kill her. That is insane. But I mean, she seemed really down for it. You know, she could have just said, no, guys, I'm not coming back for you to just kill my character off. Like, she seemed to really understand the humor of it. And, you know, she doesn't get to show up in those little fantasy sequences, which is also a call. There's so much stuff that's just callbacks to the first movie.
Absolutely.
But it's also calling back to how ridiculous it was in the first movie. Like, it's making fun of itself, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's It's got this like thing that it understands, like what, like it's a crowd pleaser in the best way possible is the best way I can describe it. Because like, so like the thing that made me feel so good, and I know this sounds weird, is, and it's the best part of the, like, I feel like it's the best part of the movie is it's the relationship between Shooter and Happy and how that gets changed and flipped on its ear.
The fight scene in the graveyard is fucking great.
Right, it's next to
absolutely great.
Right next to Bob Barker. Like yeah. What the fuck is Bob Barker
doing? Everybody's grave is just in this gravesite, including the fucking crocodiles. Like it's just, it's such a stupid thing, but it just it works for how silly the movie is. What's his name? Shit, I just drew a blank on his name. Christopher McDonald.
McDonald.
You know, there's been a lot of people who get pigeonholed into a character and get, you know, for spend a lot of their life or their career really pissed off that that happened to him and kind of having this animosity about it. Like even Mark Hamill, like, you know, had a little animosity about, like, oh, I guess I'm just forever known as Luke Skywalker. I mean, Harrison Ford has played so many characters. He's not necessarily been pigeonholed, but he does not like that people will know him as Han Solo.
Yes.
Which is insane to me. But, you know, Star Trek, all the Star Trek actors, very famously so. Christopher McDonald is the complete opposite of that. This is a dude who, by all accounts, like since Happy Gilmore, has been happy to interact with fans, like on that level, to be a dick to them, like tongue in cheek when they meet him. And bringing him back like this and kind of like giving him this, a turnaround arc, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's still a dick.
Yeah.
He's still shitty, but he gets to be a little bit of a hero. It's really kind of sweet for McDonald. Like, not for the character. Like, who gives a shit? Like, he's such a terrible person. But for that actor who so embraced that character for decades, like just, you know, on Twitter, like would be that person. And it really made me happy for him. Like, I'm glad he got to be a little bit of a hero for this. It was really sweet.
It really, I mean, it's a victory lap for him, like in the best way possible. Like, and I kind of loved that, right? Like, I loved that, like, It allows Shooter to be exactly who he is, but also it allows him to put like recontextualize in a different role. And it's like a payoff for McDonald just being a good sport about everything, right? Like, I knew that there was something going on, especially when he started being the spokesperson for for Subway. And I started seeing the ads for Subway. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, why are they? Okay. I'm like, that's different. I'm like, I kind of love this. I'm not like, oh, maybe something's, maybe it might be okay. Maybe this movie might be something okay. And it turns out that it kind of is. It's kind of like this. It's not high art. It's not like amazing, but other than One of These Days, it's the funniest movie I've seen all year. Like, quite literally, it's like right neck and neck with One of These Days. Like, One of These Days is fucking hilarious to me. That's like a traditional comedy. I still think that ultimately Thunderbolts is probably my favorite like action comedy, like my comedy thing, because that's more where my comedy fun time lies, is like the midnight run of it all. But, you know, when it comes to like, I did not have on my bingo card Adam Sandler comedy being funny and like something that I'm going to return to. And why the fuck am I not going to be able to own it on 4K or DVD? Like, at least a DVD, so I can watch it whenever I want to, at my leisure and not have to go into Netflix. But again, like, unexpected, like truly unexpected. I mean, like, in a way that I found truly funny. Like I'm genuinely shocked. Like, I don't even know, like the whole shoot, like I said, the whole Shooter McGavin thing was like, I thought that they were going to do that. Like, you see them doing the same thing. Like, you think, oh, with the Frank Manatee character who's played by Oscar-nominated director Benny Safdie, right? Like, I love that.
What, like, and talk about leaning into a character, man. Like, he just, like, we want you to play an absolute garbage, like, tech bro, you know, yuppie or you know, pseudo-hippie kind of, like, bullshit. It was perfect. He was really, really good. I thought he and Haley Joel Osment like did an excellent job of being the villains of the piece. And you know, kudos to Haley Joel Osment for showing up and doing it like the red carpet and kind of sort of press stuff after. You know, he's not had a good time of it lately. He is, you know, having some personal problems.
Yep. No, absolutely. You know, it's, yeah. But it's like, it's really fun to watch them like do the thing, right? Like, and then, like, some of the cameos, like, we haven't even talked about, like, half the cameos that are in this fucking thing. Like, Stephen A. Smith shows up being Stephen A. Smith and a shithead. Like, Ken Jennings shows up. I cannot fucking stand Andrew Santino. I fucking hate that guy. He's the redheaded guy that does the podcasting with Bobby Lee.
Yeah.
He shows up, like, they show up. Like, it's like, and that's like, I'm not even talking about half of the people that show up. Like, it's like super over.
Oh, God, what's her name? Who's in it with Eric, the little bit with Eric Andre and.
Oh, Margaret Qualley, Academy Award nominated actress, Margaret Qualley, she fucking shows up doing twerking with Eric Andre. Like,
Eric Andre has more screen time in this movie where he has a cameo than he does in the Marvel show that we just finished, Ironheart.
Oh, God, Ironheart. Oh, hell yeah, he does.
I was like, he's got more screen time here. What the hell, man? I thought that little bit of nonsense was... It's easily something you could just take out of the movie because ultimately it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But to leave it in, and I don't know. That was one of my favorite little bits in the movie.
So. Yeah. No, it was like him getting his swing back. It was kind of great. And it's like you populate it with a bunch of people that, like, okay, so the other, you know that the other kid, like, so the kid that's in, like, he's also in Please Don't Destroy. He's a comedy group. He's also an SNL. He's an SNL kid. That kid is actually Tim Hitherly's son. Like, talk about Nepo babies. You know, and then, him, Eric Andre, and Margaret Qualley, I mean, they're all, like, little cameos. But, like, yeah, he's... Like you can go on a deep dive of like all of the cameos that are in there. Like, I think I saw something on Slash Film that said there was 87 cameos, and I was like, Jesus Christ, that's a lot of fucking cameos. I mean, like, as much as like you get you have the Rachel Keel character's son show back up, but it's Boban Marjanovic, the NBA player, and you guys know him from, if you guys don't know NBA stars, you instantly know him from John Wick 3, and he plays like the big guy that Keanu Reeves beats the shit out of. But Boban is like one of my favorite NBA players, and like him, like he looks like Richard Keel, like he literally looks like Richard Keel, and he does like the same bit, but there's just something about it that's really fun. So Yeah, I mean, all over, like, overall, like, I was not expecting to like it as much as I did. And it's like, you know, and again, it's not high art. It's just an Adam Sandler comedy, but it's been so fucking long since I liked an Adam Sandler comedy. Like, it's been so long.
I honestly can't tell you the last Adam Sandler comedy that I really, like, truly enjoyed. It's probably mid to late 90s, you know?
Yeah. But like I said,
early,
like,
2000s, maybe.
I think that Big Daddy was the last one I really liked. Like of the comedies, not these dramedies or like, you know, like the dramas that he's doing, but I literally think that maybe 50 First Dates, maybe. Because I didn't like the grown up. No, you know what? No, because Hotel Transylvania isn't, like, I didn't like, man, yeah, that's rough. Like, it's rough. Like, post, maybe.
Didn't like Click, didn't like Longest Yard. 50 First Dates 2004 is probably the last one
that
I really, really enjoyed. Like, because I liked the anger management. I didn't really care for Mr. Deeds, but, you know, whatever.
I didn't like Chuck and Larry. I didn't like Bedtime Stories. I like the Hotel Transylvania stuff, but that's, like, animated.
It's not him. It's him showing up and recording lines.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, actually, maybe Longest Yard, because I think Longest Yard is 2005, and that's, like, kind more of a comedy than it is a drama. Yeah.
I didn't love it, but...
I didn't love it, but, like when I see the dip, because, like, Zohan is, like, where I was like, oh, Jesus. Like, this guy, like, what the hell? And then, like I said, like, Just Go With It, Grown-Ups, Blended, like, Murder Mystery, like...
Yeah, all this Netflix stuff. I've not been able to get into any of it, so...
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird to be like, hey, if you haven't seen this, go see it, because, I mean, everybody's watching it. But, yeah, it's just a good time, you know? Definitely a reason to re-up Netflix if you haven't for a month to just check this out and, you know, maybe re-binge Seinfeld and then cancel it. So
exactly.
December when Stranger Things drops.
The last Stranger Things. Like, don't do November, because then again, November and December.
Yeah, wait till January, and then you just watch the whole thing.
Exactly. Okay, so Fantastic Four First Steps.
Okay. Why didn't they drop the First Steps? Like, not to start off negative, but why? Just drop it. Just drop the First Steps.
Yep. No, I'm with there with you, because it's not First Steps. It's not. It's not a, it's
it like, doesn't make any sense.
No.
Like, I thought that, you know, much like the asterisk in Thunderbolts, like, I thought that something would happen in the movie that made that title make sense. And I don't think it does.
It doesn't. So. Well, so the asterisk I understand in Thunderbolts, like I do, like I, like New Avengers. Oh yeah. God. So, you
it's,
know, so
spoiler. It's really funny how they do that. And it works for what that movie is. The First Steps thing just doesn't make any damn sense. But anyway, we're not going to rag on the title the whole time. We have not talked about this movie at all and what we feel about it. So I'm real curious what you thought about Fantastic Four.
Okay, so it's good. It's good. Like, it's solid. Like, I appreciate the... I really do. Like, I appreciate the way in how it really does feel like early Pixar in how, like I said, like, it's got a breezy tone to it, though I have issues. I have an asterisk on it. Like, it's a good movie, right? And I don't want to dissuade anybody from going to see it, but, like, even after I got out of it, I feel like this is a 2.5 hour movie that's stuffed into a 2 hour movie. And if you look close enough, you can see where they made major, major cuts. And I feel like it suffered for that. It suffered, like, for the tone. They traded the tone and the breeziness for, like they traded that over the story that they were telling. And yeah. I really, like, I liked the tone, but if you're gonna give me something, I'd rather have story, because I feel like this felt like a 2 hour movie, even though it was breezy. It felt like a 2 hour movie, where I feel like the 2 hour and 15 minute to 2 hour and 30 minute version of this would have probably been a more enjoyable experience without what I saw as bumps in the road. Like, the stitching is very present to me. And if you're talking about my favorite Marvel movie this year, it's still Thunderbolts. Because Thunderbolts is a cohesive whole movie, and they let it be a whole movie.
I agree.
You know, that's it. Like, again, it is not a bad movie. Like, it's a... Like, of those Fantastic Four movies, oh, this one's, like, top by a long shot. By a long shot. But if we're talking MCU, like, and here's the problem.
And I think it's mid and maybe upper mid MCU for me.
Yes. And you know what? If this came out in 2023, it would have been a lot better. And also, like, if it didn't come on the heels of what I'm starting to feel is like upper echelon superhero movie in Superman. If they didn't come after Superman, I might have been a little bit.
Probably my biggest problem with this movie.
Yeah.
It's their fault for cutting easily 30 minutes out of this movie when at 2.5 hours it would have been fine, because you're really into this world. Like, yes. There wasn't anything where, like, I was going to check my watch, much like Superman. Like, it opens right, and it pulls you in, and you're just in with these characters. And I think they sacrificed. I don't know why they cut it. I don't know if it's a mandate from the studio that they needed a movie under 2 hours, because it's right under 2 hours, I think.
Yep.
Or if they clearly didn't have a lot of runway with the effects. Because they just finished shooting, last summer?
Yep.
So a year to get this, all this, and it's a lot of effects work. A year to get that is pressing. So maybe a lot of what we lost was unfinished special effects work, which is a damn shame. I would have rather given the movie, you know, especially now that they've pushed everything else back. If you give them 6 more months and let that effects work just breathe and come together right and make this a 2.5 hour movie, I think there's a chance we're talking about upper echelon Marvel and one of the best superhero movies we've seen this decade. Instead, it's a really, really great superhero movie, maybe the best Fantastic Four movie that's called Fantastic Four, but it also suffers from, there are people who have done this type of story and done it better, specifically yes. A dude named Brad Bird. And I know I beat that drum a lot, but it's true. I was constantly thinking about The Incredibles while watching this, which is not what you want.
No.
Even to the point where I'm like, you know what? The Incredibles was never afraid to lean into the goofy Elastigirl stuff. They were clearly terrified of leaning into Reed's powers.
Absolutely.
It showed in the trailers, and I thought maybe that was just a like, hey, we're letting the effects work cook, and you're going to see something in the movie. And I get it, his real superpower is his brain, but this is the smartest man on the planet. Why is he walking anywhere? when he can stretch? Why is he, you know, why is he not doing 47 things? Two things in two different, like, we saw it in the Tim Story movies. Does it look weird and funny and goofy? Yeah, but it's supposed to, man. And you got to kind of lean into that. It sounds like I'm really, really negative on this movie. I have a lot of issues with the shortcuts they take because it needed to be better. It's really good, but it needed to be better. It's funny, the character it sells you on the best is a character that got short shrifted literally in every other fucking Fantastic Four movie, and that's Sue Storm.
Yes. like oh my god, like Vanessa Kirby,
she's fucking great, man.
Like, she literally is Elastigirl 2.0, right?
Yeah, like, it's like you take Elastigirl and Violet, was that her
Violet
name? And
yeah,
combine their power, which is what Violet's powers were. You, yeah, combine their powers, like that Elastigirl character with those powers, like, this is what we need. Which, I mean, that's who the character eventually became in the comics, and it's there on screen. Like, she holds this movie together. You know,
she should.
Yeah.
I mean, as she should. Like that's the thing that's like the best. Like, that's the thing that they get right about this. Like, the big thing that I love about Fantastic Four is that they get the family dynamics, they get the character dynamics,
but they don't let it breathe enough.
Like, no, they don't. Not,
the second you're going to sit down with them and have dinner, fucking Silver Surfer shows up, and yeah, you know, it's just weird that they didn't give us more with that.
No,
and I get it. There's a lot to do in this movie, and you want it to move along. But yeah, the family dynamic was definitely there, and they just didn't let us sit in that. It was just like, go, go, go. Yeah. Every time the movie tried to take a beat and sit for a second, it immediately jumps into another action piece, mm-hmm, or they do a montage, you know? Yep.
They do the TV montage. Like,
yeah,
like I just, so like, yeah, like, I hate harping on the stuff, but it, like, the negative, but it really, you do see the seams the more you think about it. Like, I instantly felt it. Like, as soon as you have Paul Walter Hauser as Mole Man, who, Jesus Christ, he is perfectly cast as Mole Man.
It's so good, and you don't get enough of that. And maybe that's good. They leave you wanting more, but the sad thing is, we're not going to explore more of this world. That's what's frustrating, is that we know, because of the end of the Thunderbolts, we know that these characters are leaving, in some shape or form, leaving their Earth coming to ours. So,
we literally see at the end of this movie, like, when the end credit sequence, and we'll get to that, we see the inciting, like, we kind of figure out the inciting incident. Like, we called it. We knew what was, we kind of talked about this a year ago when we said, like, Fantastic Four First Steps is literally going to be the entryway to Doomsday. And we find out, we didn't know what was going to be the inciting incident. We now know exactly what the inciting incident is going to be and why they're going to be traveling, like, why that plane left, or why that jet interdimensionally traveled, because they have faster than light speed and all that good stuff. But
yeah.
But to go back to, like,
dude, the, like, space sequences are fucking incredible, man.
Wow. Dude,
all, like, of that shit is so good. The Galactus stuff is fucking, that suit is practical.
Yep.
Like, it's digitally enhanced, obviously, but it is a practical suit they put that man in, and it fucking rocks. It, dude, is so good.
Ralph Ineson as fucking Galactus, like, the three scenes that he's fucking in, Jesus Christ, You want more of him. You want more of Silver Surfer. Like, this is a movie.
She's incredible, man.
Oh,
like,
God,
she's so good. I just want the Silver Surfer movie about her making the sacrifice as Shala Ball instead of Norrin Red, and like what that means, and like Johnny figuring out the messages. Like, there's so much really good stuff in here that doesn't get a chance to breathe because they're going so fast that it does a disservice to a lot of the effort put into it, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is a movie that actually cuts about 30 minutes of what could be fucking just stupid screen time of origin story, and it still feels like a movie that cut an additional 30 minutes. Like, you don't need the origin story, because they do a really... The Mark Gatiss character, Basil Exposition, or Basil Television Exposition,
It's a smart way to do that. It's exactly. A really, really... Like, It definitely took... I know that they weren't taking a beat from Superman because they were making them at the same time, but I love that both of these companies were like, we're not going to do another origin story thing. Just forget about that. We're gonna give it to you in a little exposition, and you'll just have to run with it. And that's another one of the things I liked about the movie, is that, much like Superman, that it doesn't stop to really explain a lot to you. But it also does. They're oddly similar. It is so weird how similar they are, because you also have the heroes come back and they basically say, we can't say, we don't know that we can save you here. We had the opportunity and it was too high a price. And the public kind of turns their back on them really quickly, which, you know.
That's 2025 for you, though.
Yeah, I was about to say, 30 years ago, it would have been like, yeah, well, that escalated quickly. But these days, like, oh, yeah, no, but it changes so fast. I think visually the movie is, like, it's absolutely stunning. It might be the best-looking Marvel movie outside of, like, Endgame and Infinity War. Like, I don't know that they've made anything this visually ambitious. And...
Good
job, because you only had about a year to cook up a lot of these visual effects.
This was my dream. Like, to be perfectly honest, this was when we've ever talked, and I've been on record for years saying I wanted a mid-century. Because it's the only way I felt like you could introduce the Fantastic Four, is you needed a mid-century hyper future kind of thing. And this is my dream.
Where they operate. Yeah,
exactly.
The kind of world they have to live in. Because if you introduce this kind of earnestness into what is definitely a cynical MCU, it doesn't play. Much like Captain America, if you bring that character without first establishing who he was in World War II and like what kind of person he was, and like, he just feels like a dopey Boy Scout, you know? It's like, get this guy off the screen, man. Like, you know, it just doesn't play right. But when you establish the character in his own world, in a world that kind of mirrors in a lot of ways who he is, and then, you know, in Superman terms, put him on a fucking rocket, send him to another planet, freeze him in ice, put him in the future, send him to another universe, it becomes really, really easy to not kind of turn your back on the characters, because when they show up in the regular cynical MCU, they're the fish out of water, but we know why. Like, it's you get a good juxtaposition rather than feeling like jarringly different. Like, why the hell is everything so different? Why do these people talk like this? Why are they not like saying shitty things to each other? You know?
No, absolutely.
And when most of what we have in the MCU is just people, you know, snipping at each other. It's, you know,
it can be a jarring thing. And so, like, I completely appreciate that. Like, the thing that I feel like is another great, like, a great bit is so, like, is it official that Pedro Pascal is, like, a movie star? Because, like, his casting was uncannily, like, great, and I didn't expect it. His read, his vocal delivery, the way that, like, I know that, like, you know, the whole Mr. Fantastic, like, the whole, like, rubbery part of it is not there. But
no, but he's got the read. Like, that's not his fault. Their chicken shit. Like, we think it's gonna like pull people out, so we're just gonna not show a ton of his superpowers. We're gonna focus on the man and his brain and like his complicated relationships with his wife and his best friend. Less so Johnny. You know, he and Johnny always, you know, just got along for the most part. Yes,
exactly.
I mean, Pedro's fucking, the whole fucking cast is perfect. Perfectly cast. These characters are, these actors are excellent as these characters. This is the best Ben Grimm we've ever gotten.
Oh God. Yeah. E-Bomb is so good. And then, okay, I hate to bring this up, but you cast Natasha Lyonne and you cut the shit out of her role. That's a crime. That Ben role, like, okay, so like, here's the thing. This is where I brought umbrage, is that, so in the original, when the Tim Story Fantastic Four can find moments to give Ben that storyline, but you only hint at it in this movie, there's a problem. And that movie's 30 minutes shorter. Yeah. Like, it's 90 minutes. It's 98 minutes long. That's how long the original one is, or the original Tim Story one, not the original, because there's an original. We both know.
I thought it was sweet that they gave all those actors cameos.
Yeah, so. That was awesome. That really was. But it's like Natasha Lyonne, like in the moments that she's there, it's really great. But
they completely cut John Malkovich out of the movie.
Yeah. Like, I didn't even see him.
They mention him.
Yes.
They mention the character's name, and he's completely cut out of the movie. That's such a damn shame. Hopefully we get to see the deleted scenes when the Blu-ray comes out. But
I'm not holding my breath on that, because we both know that Disney is notorious, like Marvel is notoriously tight about what deleted scenes they give out, because there have been movies where we know whole plots are there and they didn't show up in the deleted scenes. You know, looking at you when Brave New World. But the thing is that the things that it gets right, it gets so right, like the tone. And I think that that's where I'm like, man, I wanted, like, we haven't had a good Fantastic Four movie, but this is a good one, but I wanted a great one or a perfect one. And that's what bothers me, is that I can see within the bones of this movie, there is a great movie here. Like, the subterranean stuff, Like, even if you just restored the subterranean stuff, I think that I would probably have a little bit more, because it kind of gives you, like, it feel like, because that stuff was always great in the Kirbyverse, because it really did talk about literally the haves and the have-nots, and maybe it was too much of a, I don't know, like Marvel doesn't like to, like, encroach itself sometimes in that area, whereas James Gunn's like, fuck you guys.
Political. Yeah.
Yeah. Where James Gunn's is like, I don't care. I'm going to make just, a great movie.
The biggest thing is, I get post-Endgame, you wanted to, like, stay in this world and tell us what happens. And some of that worked. Most of it hasn't. Post-Endgame, if you do this post-Endgame, if this is your first step post-Endgame, like, and we're getting stuff in this world, and then we come back to the MCU that we know, like, we're talking about all of this differently.
Oh,
all
yeah. of it. Oh, yeah. And, no, absolutely.
And, you know, I know they kind of want us to forget a lot of stuff that's happened between Endgame and now. But, yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's a damn shame that, like you said, it's a really good movie. It's just not an excellent one. And coming off the heels of Superman, yeah. that it feels like a letdown. It shouldn't. It shouldn't feel like a letdown. It should feel... For us, it should feel pretty triumphant. But what the hell do we know, man? It's doing pretty good at the box office. Not Superman numbers yet, which is no. Superman's at, what, $500 million worldwide?
Yeah.
In less than 3 weeks. So.
Yep. And, yeah. Like, it's just, it's a slight letdown. It's just like, I know that sounds terrible, but like the superhero movies or the comic book, like the movies that we've gotten this year with Superman and Thunderbolts, it's like Thunderbolts is like I cannot imbue to people if they haven't seen Thunderbolts, which good Lord, you haven't seen Thunderbolts, but
yeah, I mean, people haven't. So, yeah,
but I don't think that people understand how they re-upped and they revitalized with that.
Yeah.
Like
Thunderbolts was a breath of fresh air. This is more like a sigh of relief. Like, well, at least they didn't completely fuck it up. Thunderbolts felt like a breath of fresh air after like so many like pseudo good starts and letdowns and just complete fuck ups. And it's just like, holy shit, you made a movie from beginning to end that's fun, funny, action-packed, full of pathos, something we haven't got much of in the MCU lately. We've gotten this, like, fake bullshit stuff, but, like, there's some real underlying stuff in Thunderbolts.
Yep.
And it's not shocking at all that they announced this week, you know, the rumor about... the Thunderbolts director taking the X-Men franchise is in fact true. He is going to be doing Marvel's X-Men film. So,
which, man, I really wanted another Thunderbolts. Like, I really did. Like, I understand. I understand why they did that. Like, you have to lock him down. You have to give him more of a challenge. Like,
you need somebody who can manage characters.
Yeah. Like, manage the
yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right.
And really, like, it sounds terrible to say, but like, kill your darlings. Like,
yep.
He was part of the decision of like, oh, you know, actually what we need to do is kill this character in the first 10 minutes of this movie and establish some stakes.
Yep.
Like, you know, sorry. We're writing you out of the movie. We had a whole arc for you, but this is what the movie needs. And, you know, that's somebody you need. I probably won't go see Fantastic Four again. It is playing at the real IMAX here. I'm kind of interested to see how the Galactus stuff feels in IMAX, but I don't know. Like, it didn't, like Superman, I was just like, I cannot wait to see this again. This, I was like, you know, I'll rewatch it maybe when the Blu-ray comes out or it hits Disney Plus. So I can check out like special features and stuff. Yeah. Little bit of a letdown, which is weird because it was a really good movie.
No, it was. It wasn't what, like I said, like I got.
I'd rather rewatch The Incredibles.
Yeah. And also like Superman really fucked up this. Like James Gunn really kind of. Good,
man.
Like James Gunn knew what he was doing. Like he absolutely knew. Put this before. I need to make my move. I need to bring out my movie a couple of weeks before this.
Fucking flinch. Yep. Don't flinch. So, The Incredibles still gets me emotionally. Superman, I saw it twice. It got me every time. Like there's real emotion there. There's not anything in this movie that really hit me, which there are Marvel movies that have. I mean, something like WandaVision did, you know?
Yeah.
Hit me emotionally. Of course, my brother just passed away, but still, there's some emotional, there's some pathos there. And, there's a brief scene with Reed and Sue where they kind of have it out that you know, gets close to that, but you never for a second think that Reed is going to do the wrong thing.
No.
It's just that he has to think about it, you know? And like I said, the real winner in this movie is Vanessa Kirby. Like from how she brings the character to life, to the amount of like screen time she gets, the amount of weight she gets in the story. Outside of Ben, who like is a walking special effect, like Johnny stuff, it's okay. I think the fire effect is okay. Silver Surfer looks great, but like Sue gets the best visual effects. Like her shit is awesome. So, but unfortunately we don't really get to see them. Like there's some really good action team set pieces in Superman, and I don't feel like there's a ton of that here. Like we don't get to see them actually fight, you know?
Yeah.
And no, that's we don't. Kind of a shame.
So. It really is. Like we get to see them work as a team, but we don't get to see that. Now, like on the really positive side, fucking Joseph Quinn is so good as John. Like he is the Johnny that I've read. Like that's the Johnny that I understand. The guy that everybody like, oh, he's just a hot shot and a stick man. He's not smart, but he is. Like he's super smart. It's just when you're around, like he says, I think he even says, he's like, well, when you're around the smartest man in the world. And then he kind of just does that thing. But like everything that Joseph Quinn does is kind of like what I like. It's like the quiet confidence. Like it really reminded me of the way that, in a lot of ways, in the way that like one of my favorite performances of all time is the first 30 minutes of The Right Stuff with, Sam Shepard as Chuck Yeager. Like, he was like Chuck Yeager in that movie when I was a kid was the coolest motherfucker because he was just existed. He was like fucking Sam Shepard was like just the dude. And Joseph Quinn kind of takes that a little bit of that quiet confidence. He's not anything like the motor mouth that Chris Evans is, the bro that Chris Evans is. He kind of takes a seat back and does this thing where he brings in the smart mouth, like the smart alecky thing, but there's a confidence to him that I feel like separates him from Evans and Michael B. Jordan as Johnny. Like they're all very different, but I feel like Quinn is, like, for me, and I guess this guy kind of outs me because I feel like the best part of it is when they actually do the, he's the Kirby. And I've read more Kirby than anything else in the Fantastic Four world, that and the Ultimates. But he's more of the Kirby Johnny to me. And then, like, the quote at the end is great. Like, I love whenever yeah. you can do something with Jack Kirby, right? Let's just not get into his personal life. but I liked that. Like, I really did. Like, I liked his whole being able to figure out the Silver Surfer stuff. Like giving him that, it's just, yeah. he's just not given enough. Like, just the same way that that you don't get enough of Ben and their interplay. Like, their interplay is so good because
that's
it's
one of the like cornerstones of that Tim Story Fantastic Four is
yes.
those two like going at each other, you know. And you know, the this doesn't have that. So yeah, it's yeah. I don't know. I will watch it again, like I said, they're probably not going to the theater unless we just run out of movies to watch.
Yeah.
But I will watch it again, like maybe much like Guardians, walking into it knowing that it wasn't as good as I hoped it was going to be, like revisiting it, I might find more to love, not just like, you know. But I will say, I'm unlike the Eternals, I'm excited to see what else we do with these characters. I want to see what happens next for them. I'm sad that we're not getting more in this world.
Yeah.
Which is also makes the film disappointing because you want to explore more of this world and we're just not going to. So anyway, yeah. Who would have thought that we would have sat down and watched Happy Gilmore 2 on Netflix and been so ecstatic about it and walked out of the theater seeing Fantastic Four going like, it was good, but it wasn't as great as I hoped it would be.
No, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, and I think that like when you make like, and ultimately I feel like, yeah, that is such a wild thing, but like one final thing, like, and then we can kind of talk about post-credit secrets and what it means, but what it does do is this movie, like, you know, it is a sigh of relief, right? Like, this one is just a double, right? Like, it got on base, it got in scoring position. I feel like, to take the baseball term, that's exactly what this did, is that it wasn't an Ohtani walk-off homer to win yeah. the game. It was like a Mookie Betts, like, you know, double, right? Like getting in scoring position. But what it does do is it does inspire confidence when you hear the rumors, and this is all planted MCU Marvel bullshit anyways, that Doomsday, the lead character, like the two leads are Thor and Mr. Fantastic. Like, Pedro is going to be the lead in Doomsday, which that inspires, like, this movie inspires the confidence of
yeah, that. I think he can absolutely carry it. Yeah. For sure. Downey is going to be the head scratching thing that I'm just like, I want to know how that's going to play out. Like, I don't have any idea how they're going to rectify why the fuck he looks so much like Tony Stark, but whatever, well, here we are.
You haven't heard the whole new released rumor thing that happened?
I don't think so. I did text you. I had a crazy like fanboy theory about this movie and what Doomsday and Secret War might entail.
Yes, and I want you to get into that as soon as I tell you this, which is that they like the whole first third of Doomsday is playing with the fact that Victor looks exactly like Tony and will answer that question and will use that to Victor's benefit and will be the second third, the two thirds. The rumor is that it's like the movie Doomsday is set up to be like Infinity War, where there's the setup But then the payoff is all of the shit, yeah. all of the terrible shit that we're going to see, like people die and die in horrible ways, and like all of the stuff, like Doom is going to win at the end of the day, i.e. it's Doomsday, but part of his plan and part of the reason why he is able to do it is because he knows he looks like Tony Stark. Like there's that,
okay,
that metatextual added layer, which we won't, like, we will, I guess, find out right away the reasons why. And I guess it's probably going to be a multiverse. Like it's absolutely the multiversal thing. But to add to that, I like, you know, you, what you said was very interesting via text. So like, I'd love to hear your, the fans to hear this.
I don't know that it's that crazy a fan theory.
Yeah.
First of all, my original, like I put a little more thought into it, but originally I walked out thinking like, holy shit. So if you don't know, in the comics, there's a character named Onslaught. It won't get into his backstory. Like, he's decimating the MCU, and he's about to kill the Avengers and the Fantastic Four and a bunch of other, like, mainstay Marvel superheroes. And Franklin Richards is this powerful, at the time, he was considered a mutant. Now that's been retconned to he's not a mutant. But he has this, like, world, like, reality-shaping ability, which is, you know, alluded to in this movie, like, why Galactus wants him. He has immense power. And so Franklin, in this moment of, like, holy shit, everybody I know is about to die, all of the world's heroes are about to die, he pulls them from this universe and creates a different universe for them to live in, and a different reality where everybody here thinks that they're dead, but they don't know that they're from another reality. They just exist on this other plane, like as if none of that ever happened and the world's a little bit different. It was called Heroes Reborn. Look it up. Don't look it up. It gets convoluted. Yeah. But the idea that, like, all these other universes are, like, universes that Franklin created is interesting. But probably, you know, like, maybe our heroes were the heroes from that world just sent to this other universe. You know, but that's maybe a little bit too big of an idea. Now I think probably most likely the thing is that Doom has figured out how to either travel or view these other universes. Like you said, that's how he knows he looks like Tony Stark. He just doesn't know how to get there. Yeah. And Franklin is the key for getting there and becomes the catalyst for what is known in the MCU as Battle World, which is basically all of these pieces of these universes existing on one plane. Like all these disparate universes just coming together and being one world. If any character has the power to do that, it's Franklin Richards. So that'll probably be what it is. I imagine that's how we're getting the Fox X-Men characters back, because they never really existed in any other universe, despite, you know, Fox having Fantastic Four and the X-Men. So they were always separate. So it's not like the X-Men existed in a Fantastic Four universe.
Yes, and likewise, like, and the reverse. So,
yeah.
But, like, I feel like that is absolutely what's going to happen, especially with the end credit sequence. Like when you had sent that to me, I hadn't seen the film yet, and then when I saw the film, and you see at the mid credit sequence, and you see what, yeah, like he's holding Franklin, the CGI baby. We won't, yeah, get into that argument or that stupid argument. But when you see him, you're like, oh, yeah, because Franklin is the key.
It makes sense.
Yeah, because, like, and here's
It also makes sense. This is how they reboot everything. this is how you have all those characters now existing in the same universe. It's how you recast everyone. Franklin Richards is the reset button for the MCU.
Exactly. No. And you're 100% right. And because if you think about it, and I had to go back and think about this because my wife asked me this question. She goes, has anybody had, other than the babies that are fake, has there ever been somebody that's had a baby in the MCU? And she's right. The only one that's been is the imagined, Vision.
Well, Tony had a kid, but and Ant-Man had a kid.
But they're not supers. They're not enhanced. Yeah. She asked if there were enhanced or mutants that have had kids. And I was not that we've seen on screen. So this is the first on-screen, mutant. And I'm genuinely shocked they did not call them mutants in this movie.
Yeah.
I'm very shocked because, this is a world-building movie and a bridge gap movie, I feel like. Like you said, it's very much Captain America, the First Avenger. And in those movies, you just kind of throw everything in the kitchen sink into it. And, we've already seen them call people mutants already. It's all to say, it's going to be interesting. I feel like Doomsday officially has become that, and the new Spider-Man movie which now it's weird to me that are they rewriting both of those movies because now Spider-Man becomes before Doomsday?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do it.
Because from what I heard, the rumor was that the reason why they were set 3 months apart from one another is that because Spider-Man was a bridge gap film for the next Avengers movie, because it helps explain some stuff. So now you have Doomsday not coming out after Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting.
I will probably have a better idea when the trailer hits.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if Spider-Man actually has less to do with any of that. So, the name they're taking from the storylines.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, are we going to get Mephisto in the Spider-Man movie? I know we already talked about that. I did think, we kind of end on this. I know you got to go. I did think it was kind of funny. I don't know if you saw somebody asked Kevin Feige about when we would see Miles Morales in MCU.
Yes.
And Kevin Feige, who got his way with the old Marvel television stuff, got that shut down, got his hands on the Fox characters, taken time, but has almost gotten everything he wanted, character-wise, was told, no, you cannot touch Miles Morales.
Yeah. Well, but he also added in a caveat. He's like, until after the animated films are done.
Yep.
Which, I mean, we already heard the delay. I'm expecting another 6 month delay.
For sure.
Especially because, I have this feeling that they're going to split the movie in two, and there's going to be two Spider-Man movies. Just call it a hunch. I don't know anything about anything. I just, that's what I feel. But anywho, it's interesting that they said that he can't have Miles Morales, and I'm like, we'll see. I have a feeling that Sony is going to have to give up Spider-Man sometime soon. But anywho, that's just my theory. But we'll see. But ultimately, it's kind of funny to think that I'm actually more it's swapped now. Because of Superman, I've kind of looking forward to more to.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm just this DCU, man, I'm kind of digging this. I can't wait to see what Peacemaker season 2 brings.
Exactly.
We got Lanterns coming, Supergirl next year. I'm getting really stoked for all this. So yeah, it's interesting how the pendulum has very much swung the other way. Still excited for all the Marvel stuff, but the DC feels like such an unknown, like, holy shit, like, what are they going to do? Marvel feels like, the Franklin Richards stuff, I was like, oh, okay, well, I see where you're going with this now. Hopefully there's some surprises, but I don't know. Nothing in Fantastic Four really, really surprised me. So, yeah, we'll see. Anyway, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, or you can check out our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieisle.com, where I'm finishing up coverage of Fantasia Film Festival, and I saw some really great stuff, so you may want to read some of those reviews, especially if you like foreign genre films like I do. And then I've got a ton of 4K reviews coming out in the coming week or two to, like, you know, basically kill your wallet, because it's all really great stuff. But we will be back next week. Are we talking Eyes of Wakanda? Because that's coming out. Like, I didn't even realize it was coming out August 1st. They upped it.
We'll text. I may not be available this weekend, so
okay.
we'll text.
all good. But we will be back sometime soon, talking stuff that you guys probably love, or, you know, get at least frustrated with us in regards to, because, you know, we don't always have the opinions. But anywho, we'll talk to you guys next time.
See you soon.
Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Cal, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that has stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now.